We're on Fan for Racing Radio, and this is Monday, October the 23rd, 2023, and we're here for our Homestead 2 NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topic Sound-Off Discussion. So Sal Segala, our co-host, will be joining me shortly. In the meantime, we're going to start with the short track news. Afterward, we'll get into the ARCO West Series penultimate race at Madera Speedway this weekend, along with the review of the NASCAR Truck Series race at Homestead Miami Speedway. In our second half hour, we'll continue Miami and review the NASCAR Xfinity as well as the NASCAR Cup Series races at the track. Both exciting races. We end, of course, our episode with our Hot Topic Sound-Off discussion with the Fan for Racing crew, and Jay Huseman, along with Mike Orzel, will be joining us for that conversation. All right, let's go ahead and get started with some short track news. Looking at some of the top stories here. One of the big stories is that Hooters and Safe Locator are named co-presenting sponsors for the 56th annual Snowball Derby that will be taking place out at Five Flags Speedway this season. I'm looking for the date of that race. And it is going to be the Snowball Derby is one of the most exciting races around the country right now. And people come in from everywhere around the country to be involved in the Snowball Derby. So, again, that will happen again this year. And I'm super excited to see that they are going to be having that Snowball Derby again in December. Usually it's the first week in December. So watch for the details. Actually, it says the 56th annual Snowball Derby takes place at Five Flag Speedway on November 30th to December the 3rd. So that starts Thursday through Sunday. November 30 features practice for the Snowball Derby and the Alan Turner Snowflake 100 and feature racing for Five Flags, Pro Trucks, Pure Sox, and Sportsmen. Friday the 1st is the pole night for the Snowball Derby, as super late model teams will take the track battling for the top 30 starting spots in the field for the biggest race of the year. The Modifieds of Mayhem and the Crown Stocks are also scheduled to race on Friday. Saturday, of course, is the busiest day of the weekend at Five Flags Speedway. That includes the Snowball Derby's Last Chance Qualifier and the Alan Turner Snowflake 100 and its own qualifying and LCQ and the Outlaw 50-lap feature. Saturday, December 2nd, will be action-packed from start to finish at Five Flags Speedway. The weekend wraps up on Sunday, December the 3rd, with the super late model crown jewel, the Snowball Derby. The green flag will drop at 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern for that special event. I know a lot of drivers have been talking about being a part of it this year, and it always makes me happy when I hear drivers saying that they're going to be there. I know Derek Thorne is the defending winner, so he is coming back to defend that title. So that's going to be exciting to watch. All right, also announced today, Carson Hocevar is launching a late model program, and he's already tabbed his first driver. Third-generation racer Chase Pizenault will join forces with NASCAR star Carson Hocevar under the newly minted Carson Hocevar Racing banner for the 24 season. This, of course, is a weekly pro late model division and touring Ontario with the APC United Late Model Series. So this is going to be exciting to see Chase Pizenault joining forces with Carson Hocevar for next season in that series. So some good news in that regard. Also, They are showing the Winchester 400 on air on MAV TV tonight. For those of you who would like to see that race, there was a lot of action and conversation about that race, so you might want to check that out. Know that our races, our show is also available via podcast as well. So anyway, let's go on to Flow Racing, because on Thursday, Jay and I will review all the races that are upcoming this weekend in the short track and dirt track scene. But another big story that came out today is Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet and the High Limit Sprint Car Series has finalized the acquisition of the All-Star Circuit of Champions from Tony Stewart. So this is big news. A lot of people are talking about it. Everybody's got their opinion about it. But I think this is really big news. This is why Tony bought Eldora Speedway. That's why he bought the All-Star Circuit of Champions. And so this is kind of the realization of a goal, I think, for Tony Stewart. To have Brad Sweet and Kyle Larson now acquiring that All-Star Circuit of Champions. So we've got a lot to look forward to there in the upcoming year. And then speaking of the Winchester 400, a lot of people were talking about after that race, there was a big to-do between Stephen Nasse and Gio Ruggiero. They were penalized by the ASA Cars Tour. And there's a nice article up from Matt Weaver over at Short Track Scene where he talks about Stephen Nasse and Gio Ruggiero from the Winchester 400, and it's time for them to do that. So if you want to read about that, that's over at Short Track Scene for everybody to check that out. There's also a nice article over there about mutual respect from the Cars late model stock tour. Two champions have a beer after a good battle, and Stephen Nasse's name came up in this as well as Bobby McCarthy. And this was from Tri-County Speedway, and they had some bumping and banging and good hard racing, but all was good after the race when the two had a beer together and showed some good sportsmanship there. So there are those good stories out there with good hard racing on the track without knocking each other out. And this is one of those stories, and I always like seeing that. Also, Brendan Queen, Perfect in the Cars, return to Tri-County. That's available. And, oh, Sal is here. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, hi, Sharon. Thank you.
Good. I don't know how much of you heard of what I was talking about in the short track news. But anything you want to talk about in that regard?
No, not really anything. I mean, just, you know, what's been going on, you know, with all the short track racing and stuff. You know, we just had our short track championships last weekend at Kern. So.
Yep,
oh,
we talked about that.
The following show, yeah, that's right, we did.
No,
other
that's
that,
okay.
Not really much. Yeah, not really much. I mean, it's just things that are going on back east, you know, with because our season's already finished over here on the West Coast, except for the ARCA West Series, one more race. But other than that, we got one more race this weekend at Irwindale. They're going to have a $5,000 to win pro late model race combined with Haunted Night of Destruction. So they're going to have trick-or-treating for the kids and stuff like that. It should be pretty fun.
Oh, very good. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Also, the SRL National will have their 8th annual Bill Big League Senior Memorial 128. That'll be on November 25th at Freedom Factory. So that's something to look forward to next month. But with that, we will go ahead and move on to our ARCA Menards series. Did you have something you wanted to say, though?
Oh, no, we got the All-American 400 that's coming up in a couple weeks, too, on the
Yes.
On the 4th and 5th of November.
Yes, yes. So a couple of really big races coming up here. Okay, we are going to move on now to the ARCA Menards Series West at Madera Speedway. That took place this past weekend, and it was the 5150 Junior Homecoming ARCA 150 presented by the WestCar Motorsports Hall of Fame, and we've got some post-race notes here if you want to go ahead and get started with that, Sal.
Okay, to start it off, we got Caden Honeycutt scored his second career win in his third career ARCA Menards Series West start with the dominant victory in the 5150 Junior Homecoming ARCA 150 presented by the West Coast Stock Car Motorsports Hall of Fame at Madera Speedway. Honeycutt qualified second, got his jump on first-time Journal Tire Pole Award winner Eric Nascimento, and made every lap to take the checkered flag.
Yeah, it was another really dominant showing for Caden Honeycutt. Two races, two wins. He's doing all right this season. Todd Souza finished second, his third top five finish of the season, and his best finish since he finished second at Portland International Raceway in June of last year.
Trevor Huddleston was battling with Tyler Reif for the third and final lap when the two made contact entry in turn one. Reif slid up the track and Huddleston took the position, but when they went into the turn three, Reif returned the favor and made contact with Huddleston, who lost control and spun out. Reif crossed the line in third, but was penalized for rough driving to the tail end of the lead lap. Huddleston finished 10th with Reif in 11th. And actually, Reif was disqualified. That's why he was put back. So that was a penalty. So we'll see if there's any more penalties that are going to arise from it, from that incident. Tomorrow or Wednesday.
Okay, they'll come out with it sometime early this week, typically. Joey East finished third, his second top five finish in two starts this year. He finished fourth at All-American Speedway just this past September.
ARCA Menards Series, Bradley Erickson finished fourth, his first top five finish since he moved to the Joe Farr-owned number 23 Toyota. It was his third top five finish of the 2023 season out of the eighth top 10 finish.
Okay. The ARCA Menards Series West Championship leader Sean Hingorani qualified sixth, but he dropped to the tail end of the field due to an unapproved adjustment after qualifying. Hingorani was able to work his way back through the field, but he was involved in a spin with Kyle Keller at lap 104, which dropped him a lap down to the leader. Hingorani then got back to the lead lap at the next caution and then moved quickly through the field to finish the race with a fifth place.
The last lap fireworks between Huddleston and Rice cost Huddleston at least 6 points in the ARCA Menards Series West Championship standings. He is now second, 31 points behind Hingorani, heading into the series finale at Phoenix Raceway on November 3rd.
Eric Nascimento became the 202nd driver in West Series history to win a pole when he earned the General Tire Pole Award in qualifying. His 82.369 mile per hour lap also set the track record. That was better than the 81.544 mile per hour mark set by Mark Crow in 1996. Nascimento battled Honeycutt for the lead early before fading to sixth place at the finish, his sixth consecutive top 10 finish.
In Honeycutt's two victories, he's led 298 of a possible 300 laps.
Kyle Keller finished seventh. That was his fourth top 10 finish in the last five races.
Nick Giordani finished eighth, his fourth top 10 finish and third, eighth place finish and eight starts in the 2023 season.
Ryan Philpott finished ninth, his first top 10 finish since he finished sixth at Portland just last June.
There were seven cautions for a total of 39 laps. The average speed of the race was 53.726 miles per hour. Honeycutt's margin of victory was 4.248 seconds, the second widest margin of victory in the West Series in 2023, behind Ryan Preece's 9.675 second gap at Sonoma Raceway.
Wow, that's amazing. So he's been, I think we're going to see him in an ARCA Menards Series car next season. Have you heard anything, Phil?
I haven't heard anything. If he does, he won't be in the West. He'll race East because that's where Honeycutt's from. So he just took over the spot because the 17 car is in the battle right now for the owner's championship.
Right.
So Cook Brothers wanted to put somebody in the car, you know, to try to win that championship. And actually, when we talked about earlier about Huddleston being, you know, 31 points behind Hingorani, Tyler Reif is 3 points behind Huddleston, and if Reif wouldn't have wrecked Huddleston on that last lap, both he and Huddleston would have been 13 to 15 points behind Hingorani at a shot at the championship. So basically, that move by Reif was not the very smartest move. Especially on the last lap, the last corner. Oh, he basically knocked himself out of championship contention. He has to hope that there's at least 35 cars in the field to get to win the championship, and he goes back to what Dan Fredrickson, Dwayne Sharp, and Donnie Wilson talking about. You know, these young kids, they just don't think. You know, they just go out there and race, you know, and Reif never thought once, you know, looking at the big picture and just saying, hey, you know what? What happened to me in Huddleston, you know, a couple laps earlier, you know, I'll just let it go. You know what? I'll handle it on the track when we get to Phoenix. Instead, he figured it's easier to dump him, you know, thinking that he was going to be, you know, you had to know if you're going to dump him that you're going to go back to. You know, they're going to send you back for that aggressive. Yeah, for aggressive driving, but so either way, there, you know, that's
one thing that is good though, Sal. One thing that is good is it sounds like NASCAR is starting to address that kind of driving on the track, at least to some degree. They addressed the restarts in the Cup Series. They're addressing this rough racing. We've seen it. Well, the ASA Stars Tour penalized a couple of drivers for rough racing and after the race antics. So I'm glad to see that they're starting to do in-race penalties. I think it's been a long time coming, and I'm glad to see that they're finally doing it.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's just that. You know, like Steven Dassey and all the other drivers say, you know, what the ASA is doing, it's okay, but these fines are giving them, you know, they can barely make enough money to go race, you know, and they're, you know, taking, you know, these outrageous fines, you know, he goes, you're taking money away from a team, you know, it's trying to, you know, it's trying
That's
to compete.
That's true. I understand where he's coming from. Yeah, because they're not the big NASCAR teams. Those are huge fines when it comes to the local teams that are racing. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on now to the Truck Series. They raced out at Homestead Miami Speedway, the Baptist Health Cancer Care 200. The race winner was Carson Osevar, age 20, driving the number 42. Worldwide Express Chevrolet for Nice Motorsports with crew chief Phil Gould. It was his fourth victory in Craftsman Truck Series races, his fourth victory and 13th toughest season and his first victory and first top 10 finish in two races at Homestead Miami. Then Rhodes came in second, posting his third top 10 finish in seven races at Homestead and his 13th top 10 finish of the year. Corey Hyman, third, posted his second top 10 finish in two races at Homestead. Roger Caruth was eighth. He's the highest finishing rookie of the race. Carson Hocevar, Grant Infinger, Ben Rhodes all joined Corey Heim in clinching spots in that championship four. And Chevrolet clinched the first championship NASCAR ranks by earning the 2023 Truck Series Manufacturer Championship. This marks the 11th time in Truck Series history that Chevrolet has captured that title. So big news in that regard. But going back to the race, for Carson Hocevar winning at Homestead Miami, that race, of course, transferred him into that round of four for the championship race at Phoenix Raceway in a couple of weeks. Zane Smith finished in second, but he was disqualified. And we'll get to that later. But Zane Smith finished second, but failed to make the round of four. It wasn't enough, but he was later disqualified as well. Ben Rhodes says third here, but he actually finished in second and grabbed the final playoff spot. He had an ill-handling truck throughout the race, but crew chief Rick Lucius made a call to pit road under caution, with just over 50 laps left. When the pit stops had cycled through under green, Rhodes stayed on the track, and that gave him the position he needed to advance. Corey Heim was already locked into the final round after his win at Talladega. He won the opening two stages and ended up finishing in fourth place. Grant Infinger claimed that final playoff spot heading into Phoenix, courtesy of his fifth-place finish. Bailey Curry was sixth, followed by Stuart Friesen, Matt Crafton, Roger Caruth, and Ty Majeski to round out the top 10. There were eight lead changes among seven drivers and five cautions for 29 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 110.965 miles per hour. Again, the number 38 truck was disqualified for violating the NASCAR rulebook number 14.47.1, windshield support. So NASCAR is bringing the number 38 truck back to the R&D center, and we'll hear probably tomorrow or Wednesday if there are any subsequent rulings in that regard. But he was disqualified from that second place finish. Your thoughts about the race results, Sal?
You know, it was a good race. Congrats to Carson Hocevar. It was a dominating win, and I thought for a while that maybe Ben Rhodes might have had something for him, but he didn't. And Corey Heim for all the laps of the event, kind of like he was gonna steal the show. That all of a sudden, Hocevar just
this
moved in there, and once he
rises.
Moved in, yeah, he never moved out. Well, I would say Hocevar is the cream. I would say he's the cream, but I mean, he got out front, did what he had to, and at the same time, knocked out. Who was it that was on the
Christian? Well, Christian Eckes had some issues, and he fell below the line.
No, I'm talking about
Nick Sanchez.
No, not Nick. I thought Nick was going to make that whole point scene just kept changing and changing and changing. It was crazy. It was just changing and changing. But Zane Smith.
Yeah.
I thought for a minute Zane Smith was going to win the race. You know, he was going to race. I thought he was going to race his way in.
Yep. I mean, it didn't happen. Marco Andretti
ended
up in 18. Yeah, he was. But it turned out that he had an illegal car.
Yeah. Well, that was after the fact that, you know, when he went to Tech after he was done, but he did have a fast truck.
He did indeed. All right. So you had the four drivers who finished one through four, playoff drivers. Ty Majeski ended up with a ninth place finish. Nick Sanchez, 17th. Christian Eckes in 20th. And Zane Smith ended up dead last due to the disqualification. There was an electrical issue for Spencer Boyd that took him out of the race on lap 50. Also an electrical issue for Spencer Davis that took him out of the race on lap 65. Everybody else was able to be running at the end of this race. There were 14 drivers finishing on the lead lap, and the rest of the drivers from 15th through 31st, including the last place, were running at the end of the race, but they were one or more laps down as a result. Yeah, I thought it was a really good race. It was good to see Carson Hocifar back in victory lane. And you're right, we didn't know. Even though the margin of victory was over 2 seconds, almost 3 seconds, there was still hope that maybe something would happen and one of the other guys would win. But we'll have to wait for Phoenix now. We know who the final four are. Do you want to cover the point?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, it's going to be exciting once we get to Phoenix and see who the final is going to be our new champion this year. So the points are yep. Corey Heim. He has a round win. Carson Hocifar now has a win, and then from there we go to Grant Infinger, who's sitting in third, Ben Rhodes in fourth, and that's going to be our championship four for when we get to Phoenix. And then below that, then it goes Nick Sanchez, Christian Eckes, Ty Majeski, and Zane Smith. Gosh, Zane Smith had a horrible chase this year.
Yeah, he really did. And what I find so startling is it was so close at one point, and now the points are just Ben Rhodes is 52 points away from the leader. Nick Sanchez also 52 points, but Ben Rhodes had the best performance throughout the round. But he's now 52 points back of that cut line. Back, Christian Eckes 56 points back, Ty Majeski 60 points back, and Zane Smith 117 points back. Pretty
amazing. You know, that really has to take a toll. I know it really has to take a toll on Zane Smith, on his dad Mike, you know, to, you know, go to all his races and see him race, you know, especially being a past champion. You know, to see him not even make the top four, you know, is just, you know, it was a real bummer.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. He'll be racing with Spire next year, right? Huh?
Yeah, he'll be with Spire. I was kind of hoping to see Carson Hocifar give him a break, and you know, and not win the race, you know, and let Zane win it, you know, and Zane to get in and, you know, switch it up. But you know, everybody wants that trophy.
Yeah, but think about it, Sal. If he had won that race, if Zane had won that race, he still would have been disqualified, and Carson would have still gotten it.
Yeah, but who knows? You know, he got disqualified, yeah, but you never know. NASCAR might have just turned the cheek. You know, hey, we got our last year's champion in the playoffs. You know what? He has an infraction, you know, we're just going to turn our cheek and not say nothing. You know, you never know.
I don't think they're. I don't know.
You never know.
I'm glad we didn't have to cross that.
Exactly. Because look what happened with Jeff Gordon that one year that Jeff Gordon got hurt.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they made, oh, you know, we're going to add one extra driver into the chase. You know, we'll just add, because Jeff Gordon was the man out. Oh, yeah, well, you know, we're just going to add one more. You know, we'll just add Jeff Gordon, you know, even though he didn't make it.
Well, yeah, I'm glad we didn't have to have that discussion. All right, we're going to go ahead and move on now to the Xfinity Series. The Contender Boat 300 was raced at Homestead Miami Speedway the same day. It was a doubleheader day, and the race winner was Sam Mayer at the age of 20 in the number one Accelerate Pros Talent Chevrolet for Junior Motorsports and with crew chief Marty Lindley. It was Mayer's fourth victory in 82 Xfinity Series races, his fourth victory and 18th top 10 finish this season, and his first victory and second top 10 finish in two races at Homestead Miami. Riley Herbst has been having a great run, 2 seconds in the first in the last three races. Riley finished second, posting his fourth top 10 finish in five races at Homestead Miami and his 15th top 10 finish of the season. John Hunter Nemechek finished third, posting his third top 10 finish in three races at Homestead. Sammy Smith finished ninth. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. And then we go to the actual race review. Sam Mayer claimed his first Xfinity Series oval race victory in the second half of the doubleheader at Homestead Miami on Saturday, holding off last week's race winner, Riley Herbst, by just 0.227 of a second. In a very close finish, Sam Mayer won the Contender Boats 300 race at Homestead Miami. And Mayer is the first driver to be locked into the championship battle at Phoenix for the Xfinity Series. Riley Herbst followed up his dominant Las Vegas performance with a runner-up finish at Homestead, coming up just shy of the victory. Then it was John Hunter Nemechek who finished third while battling a cold. Austin Hill finished fourth, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. rounded out the top five in his second and final start of the season. Daniel Hemric finished sixth. Then it was Parker Kligerman, Brandon Jones, Sammy Smith, Joe Graff Jr., and they round out the top ten. Cole Custer, what a heartbreaker for him. He led a race-high 114 laps and won the opening stage, but had a flat tire late in the race and dropped to 13th in the finishing order. Derek Krause won his first career stage in stage two and finished in 11th place. Additional playoff drivers finishing outside the top 10 were Justin Allgaier, who finished in 15th. He had a loose wheel and was trapped off the lead lap. Sheldon Creed finished 26th. Chandler Smith finished 34th with an expiring engine. There were 6 cautions for 33 yellow flag laps. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers, Sal?
Yeah, Riley, I think one more lap, Riley would have had him.
I think you're right.
He would have had that win. But, man, I felt so bad for Cole when he hit the wall.
Yeah.
He goes, man, he goes, the one time I hit the wall, and it's the one time that I get a flat, you know, and he was just so dominant, you know, was going to lock himself, Miami, not Phoenix.
Well, he's got one more chance to do it at Martinsville.
Yeah, he does. I mean, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be an exciting race. You know, you just feel bad, you know, for somebody to have that kind of dominance, and all of a sudden, you know, he decides he's going to go up on the wall like everybody else. And, you know, to find out, you know, if the wall for him is not the place to be because, you know, he cut that tire and got that flat. You know, John Hunter, and he was
Sammy Smith had a good run.
Yeah. So did John Hunter Nemechek continues to be. It looks like he's going to be one of the favorites.
Mm-hmm.
to win this championship. But, you know, once again, you know, congratulations to Sam Mayer, you know, for getting that win. And, who was it? Carson was the one that said no burnout, because if he gets and does a burnout, he needs that truck for – he needs that the engine for Phoenix. And,
yes.
He said, he goes, I can't do a burnout because I need it for –
For Phoenix. He said he didn't want to mess up that truck.
You know, we're getting down to the end. Derek Krause gets stage 11. Win. Yeah, and Falters, and you know, that's the last we see of him. Finishing 11. Yeah, he finished 11th. You know, it's funny because there are some jokes that were made on social media today, and Joe Graff Jr. was the brunt of most of them.
Oh, that's a shame.
He finished the race. I know, because he finished the race and didn't wreck. So, congrats
right
to Joe, you know, on that
finish.
10th place. Yeah, he got himself a top 10, so that's big
for him and his team. And it really is. It is.
Yeah.
He was driving that number 19 for Joe Gibbs Racing, though, so he was in good equipment. Now, there were only 12 cars who finished on the lead lap in this race, Sal. And then another, let's see here, it looks like down to 30th place. All those cars were running on the lead, on not the lead lap, but they were running at the end of the race, although... from position 13 on, they finished a lap or more down. Ryan Newman was in this race. He was out, though, on lap 27 because of a rear gear issue. C.J. McLaughlin had a carburetor issue that took him out of the race on lap 37. Dawson Cram was out on lap 65 due to an accident. Brett Moffitt had an accident that took him out on lap 97. Chandler Smith had that engine issue, taking him out on lap 138. Then it was Mason Maggio out on lap 153 because of an electrical issue. Josh Berry had an accident that took him out on lap 171. Connor Mosack also had an electrical issue, and it took him out of the race on lap 190. So really awful to see drivers have those kind of mechanical issues that end their day, especially, you know, drivers like Chandler Smith, who is a playoff driver. He wanted to have a much better finish than that. Same with Sheldon Creed. Sheldon continued to run, but he still finished in 26th place.
Yeah, well, that's like Dale Earnhardt Jr. felt bad because he knocked Josh Berry out of the race, you know.
Yes.
You know, he apologized for it after, you know, said, you know, sorry for knocking my, you know, my teammate out.
His driver.
His driver, you know, well, teammate and driver, you know, that was kind of ironic.
Kind of a shame, yeah.
Yeah.
Cole Custer, even though he had that problem, got the flat tire, he was able to rally back to a 13th place finish. But let's go over the points. I don't think that 13th place finish helped him, though.
As far as the points right now, heading into Martinsville, it's Sam Mayer is leading of course, he's leading because he's got that win, so he's already locked into the championship four. Next is John Hunter Nemechek. And then it's Cole Custer, Austin Hill, and Justin Allgaier are all tied in points.
Yeah. Isn't that
and then
something?
From there, then you go down to Sammy Smith is in a must-win situation. Chandler Smith is in a must-win situation. And so Sheldon Creed is in a must-win situation going into next week's race this weekend's race at Martinsville. So you got five drivers who well, actually three drivers who are in must-win situations. And then you got three drivers who are all tied. And basically, if they tie them, they're going to have to go to the tiebreaker to see who advances into the championship four. Yes,
that's going to make this a very exciting race to watch at Martinsville this weekend, because that is the elimination race. So four drivers will not make it into that championship four that will be able to compete for the title at Phoenix. And the three drivers that are most vulnerable are those three that you just mentioned, Cole Custer, Austin Hill, and Justin Allgaier. And those are all really good drivers.
Yes, they are. So it's going to be exciting to see how they, to see their strategy, you know, to see, because basically it's going to go by, they're going to need those stage points. They're going to need those stage wins. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, you're going to see a couple drivers, you know, they're going to take some chances, you know, and stay out, you know, to get that, you know, to grab those extra few points, you know, at the end of the stage. And then for the rest of there, it's going to be on who's going to get the race win and where they're going to finish from there.
Yeah, exactly right. It's going to be very, very exciting, and I can't wait to watch all these guys race next weekend to find out who those final four drivers are going to be, because it's a tight battle when it comes to the Xfinity Series. And like I say, all three of those drivers are capable of winning the championship, and now they're vulnerable to not even being in the final four. Two of them will make it. One of them won't, and that's what's going to be amazing. And you never know what happens if one of those guys that are below the cut line, that are, you know, a lot of points behind, if they win at Martinsville, they're going to leapfrog everybody.
Yes, they are, and it's going to be exciting. I know that. It's going to be a good race. It's going to be a good but like they say, not everybody can win. So if you're not going for the win, you know, go for the points.
Yeah. Those points are super, super important. For sure. Okay, we're going to move on to the Cup Series real quick, Sal. Guess who my race was for this week in the Cup Series?
Christopher Bell.
I said Christopher Bell was going to ring the bell this weekend at Homestead, Miami, and that's exactly what he did. In the four.
He rang the bell at. He rang the bell, and Kyle Larson rung the trash cans.
Well, he had his bell rung, that's for sure.
Or had his bell rung. Oh, yeah, I'm sure he hit it. His head was...
Yeah, I'm sure he felt that one. Okay, now the Forever 400 was named by, presented by Mobil 1, was in honor of Kevin Harvick, who raced his last race at Homestead Miami Speedway. I thought that was really cool how they did that. Christopher Bell was the winner at age 28, driving the number 20 Ream Watts Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. They don't list his crew chief here, and I'm trying to think who his crew chief is. I'm not sure offhand. It was his sixth victory in 132 Cup Series races, his second victory and 12th top 10 finish of the year, and his first victory and second top 10 finish in four races at Homestead Miami. Ryan Blaney finished in second. He was none too happy with Kevin Hart, Denny Hamlin. I saw a video, and it was pretty interesting. Ryan Blaney posted his second top 10 finish in nine races at Homestead Miami and his 12th top 10 finish of the season. Tyler Reddick finished third, posting his third top 10 finish in four races at Homestead Miami. And Ty Gibbs finished in seventh place. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. And we'll go to the race recap here. Christopher Bell wins in Miami, and he's back in the championship four for the second consecutive season. In one of the most thrilling NASCAR Cup Series playoff races of the season, Joe Gibbs Racing driver Christopher Bell rallied from a frustrating race start to lead the final 16 laps of Sunday's Forever 400, presented by Mobil 1 at Homestead Miami Speedway during his second straight appearance into the championship four. Bell, who only made his first appearance inside the top five on the track with less than 50 laps remaining, got around a pair of the day's front runners in the final laps to blaze to the lead in the number 20 JGR Toyota and claim his automatic championship admission ticket. It is the 28-year-old Oklahoma native second win of the season, the sixth of his career, and the first of the season's eight playoff races to date. Let's see. Ryan Blaney again finished in second, followed by Tyler Reddick. Then it was William Byron, A.J. Allmendinger, Bubba Wallace, Ty Gibbs, Joey Logano, Eric Almirola, and Austin Dillon. Bill never took the lead in the race until 37 laps remaining. He came back after a late caution to grab the lead again with 15 laps to go and pulled away to win by 1.6 seconds over Blaney. Several playoff drivers had trouble during the race. Kyle Larson led 96 laps on the day, but he hit that barrier trying to get into pit road with 54 laps remaining and could not continue to finish, and he ended up in 34th place. Denny Hamlin got into the wall in turn two with 32 laps left to race. And after something broke in the steering wheel, he ended up finishing in 30th place. The pole winner, Martin Truex Jr., had engine problems with 30 laps left. He fell out, finishing 29th. But the good news is stage one was won by Kyle Larson. Stage two was won by Ryan Blaney. And there were 25 lead changes among nine drivers and five cautions for 35 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 125.221 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers here?
Yeah, it was a good race. I mean, it was Ryan Blaney sure was not happy with Danny Hamlin, but you know, we're starting to see Danny Hamlin getting close to the final four, and he's starting to explode again. Self-destruct
yeah,
in one more race
time.
And not make the chase. I mean, you know.
Well, he's in a must-win. He has to win it at Martinsville.
Oh, yeah, he does. He's way out of the points. You know, and then you'll see Ryan Blaney and Tyler Reddick, you know, after battling William Byron, you know, I guess you could say the young
guys. I'm just glad
drivers
calling them out finally.
You know, the up-and-coming drivers, you know, are, you know, starting to make, you know, to make some noise. So Ty Gibbs, another top 10, finished seventh,
mm-hmm.
Highest finishing rookie. And Kevin Hart, the most he can get out of the seventh place. But like I said, out of there's just a lot. Joey Logano, 8th. Eric Almirola, 9th. And Austin Dillon, in the 10th spot.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Looking forward to Martinsville to see who the Final Four is going to be.
Yeah, we talked about the four playoff drivers. They had a good race. Christopher Buescher finished in 21st place. Martin Truex, we mentioned that, 29th, Denny Hamlin right behind him in 30th, and then Kyle Larson in 34th place. Just a shame to see that happen. Harrison Burton was out on lap 165 due to overheating issue. Josh Bilicki had an accident that took him out on lap 201. Several accidents here. Kyle Larson out on lap 214. J.J. Yaley and John Hunter Nemechek were out on lap 218, all because of accidents. Lap 221, it was Ross Chastain due to an accident. Lap 236, Denny Hamlin, accident. Martin Truex Jr. had an engine failure that took him out on lap 237. And then the rest of these cars from 28th up finished running. But of those cars, 23 of the cars finished on the lead lap. The rest were a lap or more down at the end of the race. But the margin of victory, 1.651 thousandths of a second. It was a good race, but did it shake up the points.
Oh, yeah, it sure did. I mean, there was almost a photo finish. You know, it was so close. But, you know, congrats to Christopher Bell. Congrats to Ryan Blaney. You know, if they're able to race each other clean, you know, and let their, you know, basically let their cars do the talking.
Yeah, it's kind of like what you said about the Xfinity Series race. If Blaney had had another couple of laps, he might have won it. You want to cover the points?
Yeah, let's get to the points. The points are, let me see. I just had them, and they disappeared on me. Okay, here we go. Points are Christopher Bell. He's got that win. He's locked in. Kyle Larson has his win. He's locked in. So now we're just looking for William Byron, 30 points ahead of the cutoff line. Ryan Blaney is 10 points up. And then from there, then we go to Tyler Reddick, Denny Hamlin, who's 17 points back. Martin Truex Jr. is 17 points back. And Chris Buescher is now in a must-win situation if he thinks he's going to contend for the championship this season.
Yeah, technically Denny Hamlin, Martin, and Truex Jr. could get in on points, but that would mean that Ryan Blaney and William Byron would have to have a bad day. And it could happen. So we might see a shakeup after Martinsville as well. We'll have to wait and see how that all plays out. But, wow. Did you think the regular season champion would be in this position?
They just fell apart in
the playoffs.
I didn't think we'd see the top four where we're at right now with this top four. I kind of expected Denny Hamlin to be in the top four, but I never gave him the chance to win it. But you know, he's just, you know, there comes a time, I mean, for a second, let's just go back to what Kevin Harvick had, Kevin Harvick Racing. He had the Xfinity, the Truck Series team. You know,
yeah.
Kevin said it the best. You know, he stepped back and sold him. He goes, you know what? He goes, I cannot race Cup, stay focused on my Cup team, plus what I got going on with my, you know, with my other two teams. Now imagine Hamlin is trying to jostle a Cup team, which is a lot more, you know, takes a lot more than handling an Xfinity or Truck team because they don't race every week like the Cup team does. So I think there comes a time when he needs to step back and say, hey, you know what, I'm either going to be a team owner or I'm going to be a driver, because the way it's going, he's going to go down as another driver that never won a championship.
Yep. We're not saying he's not talented. Denny Hamlin is talented. There's just something about him, though, that he continues to shoot himself in the foot year after year after year. And it's sad to see, quite honestly. But like I say, I think Denny Hamlin's a talented driver, but he has kind of said and done some things to several other drivers that they're finally starting to call him out. And
yeah.
I think that needed to happen too.
It was like Mark Martin. I mean, Mark Martin was a heck of a driver, just could never win a Cup Series championship.
Yeah.
You know, another one was, I was thinking of one right now too, besides Oh, I was thinking of Bobby Labonte. Bobby Labonte won a lot of races, was a really damn good racer, only won one championship. You know, and, you know, and he was a good, you know, darn good racer. But, you know, you look at Mark Martin, you know, who was, you know, well, Kyle Busch took that over. But, I mean, for a while, Mark Martin had the most wins, you know, Nationwide Series wins. You know, Kyle Busch took that over. But, I mean, Mark Martin, a lot of wins, and just could never seal,
you know,
a Dale Earnhardt Jr., another one. Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Yeah.
could never get a Cup Series championship, you know. You know, and everybody thought,
you
know, he'd have a few.
Good drivers.
Know? Yeah, and everybody thought Jr. would have gotten at least two or three of them. And, you know, and Hamlin's just going to be one of those drivers, you know what, that's going to He might even have the credentials to be a Hall of Fame material.
He might at that. Well, now, one of the things that I think has been interesting about this year's playoff races is too, races as well, is that you got Martin Truex Jr. with 36 playoff points, Denny Hamlin with 32 playoff points. And look where they are right now. They're below the cut line. Those playoff points are saving them at this stage of the game. Without those playoff points, they would be even further back. So I hate to think about where they'd be without those playoff points. But playoff points have played a critical role.
Oh yeah, they have. They, you know, and we've talked about in the past, you know, that, you know, drivers with the most playoff points, they usually it's usually automatic that they're going to go into the final, you know, race, you know, at Phoenix, and it just didn't work out that way.
It might not happen out that way this year. William Byron has the most, and he's the points leader. He has 41. Martin Truex has 36 playoff points, and Denny Hamlin has 32. If you took those playoff points off of their score, keep in mind that Truex's 36 points includes his 15 bonus points for being the regular season champion. If you took those points out of the equation, they would be even further back. Pretty amazing.
You know, and like I said, you know, we're going to see, you know, probably William Byron. You know what? He's, you know, a good finish, a good top five finish, and Byron's in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's 30 to the good on all the drivers except for Ryan Blaney. He's 20 to the good on Blaney, but as long as he finishes ahead of Blaney, you know, he's in.
Blaney's been awful good the last few races. I think they're going to have their hands full. But Martinsville is one of those tracks that a lot of things can happen. Some drivers love it. Some drivers hate it. And the cream is going to definitely separate when we get to Martinsville. But it's also one of those tracks that something can happen that can take you out of the race, and it has nothing to do with anything you did. You're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. So we'll see what happens. One thing we do know, Sal, we're not going to see the Watermelon Man ride the wall this year.
Nope. We ain't going to see him do anything. He could win the race, but there ain't going to be no crazy antics. And Bubba's out, too.
Nope.
So, you know, if you notice, you haven't heard anything about Bubba since he's been out. He got quiet, you know, they shut him up.
He's been real quiet.
And if Hamlin don't make the chase, Hamlin will be shut up. He'll be quieted too, so we won't have to hear him.
Well, we've got a lot to look forward to next week. Are you going to be at the racetrack, Sal?
Yeah, I'll be at Irwindale for it. We have a short track. This is our last big race. It's a 5,000-to-1
okay.
Pro Late Model race. They're teaming it with just put it together with the Night of Destruction. So it's going to be exciting.
Okay. Well, we always like having you on the show, Sal. I hope you enjoy your weekend, and we'll look forward to talking to you again coming up next Monday night after Martinsville.
All right, everybody, have a good evening, and we'll talk to you later. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Sal. All right, it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off discussion with our Fan for Racing crew, and we have Jay Huseman and Mike Orzel here. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I'm going to try and weather through this. I think the weather this weekend got me a bit, so I started to have a cold, but I know we're early tonight and should have a rather short show, but happy to be on anyway.
Okay. And Mike Orzel, welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening. Glad to be back.
All right. Jay, why don't you give us our first hot topic tonight?
All right. I know we kind of touched upon this one a little bit, Sharon, because that's what I was surprised to see it up. I know we had it on the list last week. Must have been Thursday, but the Cars Tour issued some penalties from the Winchester late model race with Steven Nassi and Gio Ruggiero. There we go. Thank you, Sharon.
Okay. I'm surprised we didn't talk about that. Mike, are you familiar with this?
I didn't watch the race or anything like that. I am familiar with the incident. I guess we just didn't get to it on Thursday, but yeah, I can talk about it a little bit.
Okay, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what precipitated it, but no matter what happened on the racetrack, there is absolutely no circumstance in any way, shape, or form that justifies basically intentionally spinning the back end of your car into a crew member and hitting him, which is exactly what happened there. And you know, to be honest with you, any penalty that involves him, this was Ruggiero, I believe, who was the one who hit the crew member. And correct me if I'm wrong.
That was.
But
let me kind of clarify here. That was actually Steven Nassi's dad that he hit. And his mother was also running toward the track. And they've said that that was a dumb move on their part, too, running up on the track like that when he's getting ready to do a spin-out.
I mean, either way, it was a confrontation. You knew something was happening right there because you had the driver who won the race, and then the guy who felt he was wrong coming up there to show him the social finger or whatever it is he's going to do. And, yeah, you're right. It's dumb to get involved in that, but that still doesn't excuse a driver in a 3,400-pound race car from intentionally spinning that car and hitting somebody. This wasn't somebody getting caught up in a celebratory burnout. This was a driver who was angry and was retaliating against the winner of the race, who he felt had wronged him, and he happened to hit somebody on the racetrack. And in my opinion, any penalty that involves that person having an opportunity to get back in a race car anytime soon didn't go far enough, and that's kind of my take on that.
Okay. Yeah, there were penalties that were issued to both teams, and I think that was the right call because what we saw of the incident after the race with the burnout and Steven Nassi's dad getting hit by the car driven by Gio Ruggiero. And that's when Steven Nassi got out of his car and ran toward his dad who had just been hit. And he saw his mom running that direction as well. So he jumped out of his car. And honestly, I can't tell you if Gio Ruggiero knew that his dad was running toward them or not, but there was an incident before the burnout where the two were kind of were at odds with one another, But there was also some hard racing on the track that kind of crossed the line as well. And so the ASA Stars Tour did issue penalties for both teams. Stephen Nassy got hit with the hardest on those penalties, which I thought was kind of surprising, given that Gio Ruggiero was the one that hit the Stephen Nassy's dad with the burnout. I kind of thought he would get hit heavier. But I will say they both deserved penalties, I think, in this case. They were both racing overly over the line hard on the track and bumping and hitting each other. And they both took their penalty. The one good thing is that they're moving on from it. They've decided that it's not in their best interest to kind of keep this feud going. And they're moving on to the next race and kind of putting all of this behind them. And for that, I think it's really good. But I can't blame Stephen Nassy for being concerned for his dad and his mom in that situation either, being hit by that car. And you're right. It's horrible. And if he had any idea that anybody was on that track, he had no business doing that burnout. But it just makes me wonder if he knew that they were there or not. And that's what we really don't know. So, Jay, tell me what your thoughts are, and then I'll tell you more on the go-around.
All right, and I recall this now was I think we were waiting for Andy to come on Thursday. We kind of prefaced this as one we might get to, is where we talked about it just a little bit. And I stand by mine. I say this is one of the five most egregious acts I have seen when it comes to post-race activities. There obviously was confrontation, and it says that Nassy had done pulled up next to his car, gave him the door slam, gave him the finger. That was his part of expressing his frustration. The retaliation builds as they have words or whatever. But you know there is a crowd of people because it was at the tail end of pit road. To burn out like that while you're in that environment, to act out like that in that way, in that environment, because you don't know who's around or how it can be affected, you know, that's I'm not even going to say it. It's just really, really bad. And I agree with Mike and Sharon, you said it too, that on that end for Gio, I think the penalty should have been even more. Now, Stephen Nassy actually feels that the fine they got, based on the fact that it is a regional short track racing, the fine was a little hefty for the amount of money they make. They said they provided great short track racing on the track for the fans to get their money's worth. He wasn't happy with the fine and his portion of it. It's one of those, I mean, if you initiate it, you know, you were expressed your frustration, I get it, but then they're going to express their frustration in return. You got to be willing to be a part of it when it comes to the penalties. You know, if you were involved in the post-race altercation, you had a role. So I wouldn't say, I mean, I understand what he's saying, maybe of that, as he compared, it's not the NASCAR level. They don't make millions of dollars. You know, this fine actually hurts them. Well, it needs to, and maybe that's where they feel this was enough because the fine is a great amount compared to what they make a weekly racing. But I still think that in this case, whether it be at least 1 week, there should have been a driver suspension on Gio's side.
Yeah. Mike?
Well, I pretty much said my take on that. I really don't have a whole lot more to add, so I'll pass to you, Sharon.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is one of those cases. You got Stephen Nassy, who's been in racing for quite a while now, and although he's young, he can be considered a veteran. Gio Ruggiero is one of those drivers that's coming up through the ranks. He's kind of more of a newer driver. And I think this is one of those classic things between a veteran driver and a newer driver. And a lot of these newer drivers, we've talked about this, don't they do whatever they need to do at the end of the race, even if they have to knock the leader out of the way to get that win. And that's what happened in this case. Gio Ruggiero, Steven Nasse was leading. Gio Ruggiero knocked him out of the race and ended up winning. Steven Nasse is the kind of guy, he knows what kind of effort goes into these cars. Gio Ruggiero should know that too, but again, it's that younger attitude that these guys don't look at the bigger picture of, I had to do it if I was going to win, is knock them out of the race. And you guys know how I feel about winning in that way. I've never been a proponent of knocking your competitor out of the way in order to win a race. I want to see your talent on the racetrack. And we had a good example of that in the Tri-County race that took place this week. And these guys ended up at the end of the race having a beer together. They were bumping and banging all the way across the finish line. But at the end of the day, they went and shook each other's hands and had a beer afterwards. That's not what happened in this case, and it's because one guy got knocked out of the race. And that's where these younger guys don't seem to understand that it reflects very poorly on them when they win a race in that way. They're not showing their talent. They're just being a bully about it and going out there. They're not showing respect for their fellow competitor. And that's what we saw at Tri-County. It was a lot of respect for each other. Even though they were bumping and banging, they weren't doing it to knock each other out of the way. And Gio Ruggiero, I think it just shows his youth. It shows his lack of maturity. And I wholeheartedly feel like maybe he should have been fined a little bit more. And I agree with you, Jay. I think that I know Steven Nasse said, we're not NASCAR drivers. We're out here making a living out of, doing these races, and we can't afford fines like that. But I think ASA is making it a point saying the reason these fines are so high is because we don't want to see you doing this again. So I think the message has been given. These guys are moving on from it. I hope it was a learning opportunity for Gio Ruggiero, because I don't agree with the way he ended that race and the way that he won that race. If I was the governing officiating or whatever, I probably would have disqualified him. So I'm just glad that we can all put it in the rearview mirror. But there's a good article over on Short Track Scene if you haven't read it. Steven Nasse was one of the drivers, and McCarty, McCarty was the other driver, and they shook hands. Bumping and banging all the way to the finish line. After the race, they shook hands and had a beer together, and there was a lot of respect there. And that's the way I like to see races in. Jay?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, the money is definitely hefty for them at that level when you look at it, but I think an even stronger message needed to be sent. That, hey, this will not be tolerated, period, especially the post-race activity in an area such as pit road where there are others involved. So, and I know Steven Nasse, actually his crew is the one that took the bigger hit as far as the fine and then the suspensions, because some of those suspensions carry into next season. I believe they got one or two races left this year and then three into next year when it comes to the whole crew involvement. And we've seen that be enforced at all levels of racing. I know we talk about it at the top level of NASCAR, but they need to learn this at this younger stage. As you said, some of these drivers are developing, coming up with this attitude or the way they act. And if it's not going to be allowed at the top level, they need to correct that problem when they're young and moving up through the different systems, whether it's a direct system to NASCAR or not. It still needs to fall in line with, hey, as you move up, this isn't going to be acceptable, so don't do it now and get in that, as you say, Sharon, bad habit of doing it more than three times. Don't develop that habit because it's not going to be tolerated.
Yes, and I think it's a good message to send. All right, Mike, what's our next hot topic?
Well, we've only got one race left before the cutoff for the Final Four championship race. What are our opinions on the – well, really, there's six drivers left vying for two positions because we know that Christopher Bell and Kyle Larson have already advanced to the championship four. What's everyone's opinion on where we're standing right now? Who's going to get those last two slots? Who's going to be on the outside looking in?
Okay, you're talking about the Cup Series, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Jay, what are your thoughts?
I've never been more confident in my life, and I'm going to say this right here, right now, on Fan for Racing Blog Talk Radio. Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell, and two other drivers are going to race for the championship. Because it's a big unknown. That's a pretty solid branch I'm standing on there when you go out on the tree limb. But, no, I mean,
no kidding.
We think about Martinsville. Yeah, you like that? think about Martinsville. Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex had rough days. Both of those, statistically-wise, very good at Martinsville. So those could be one of your two as far as winning you're in. I know there's a little bit of point situation when we talk about that. Somebody's going to get in on points. I believe William Byron is still in a fairly secure position. And guess what? He drives for Hendrick Motorsports. I know, there again, it hasn't been his best track statistically, but HMS as a whole, that organization, puts drivers in cars that are capable of winning. And then I know the move itself is illegal, but we could see something like the Hail Mary from last year of one driver just makes up a lot in that final go time. Obviously you can't do it in the manner in which Ross Chastain did, as that's been deemed illegal, but you never know what kind of move can be made. I think about it. We've seen it. I'm thinking back to Ryan Newman and Clint Boyer was one of them. When it comes to Martinsville, dive bombing that first corner and taking out the first 3 to 6 rows, you could be starting in the 12th and 13th position and come out of a corner with the lead. So it's going to be interesting. And, yeah, at this point, I do think, like I said, of being that one driver is going to get on points, I do believe that's going to be William Byron. So I'll go out on a little bit skinnier limb there and say that William Byron's going to join them. Whether that's via win or not, could be either way. So that leaves it, in my mind, one spot open. And it is wide open, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the points, actually, mathematically, these guys could still get in on points. If William Byron or Ryan Blaney had a bad day, that puts, these other three drivers – well, not all three of them, but at least two of the three, right back into it based on how they run at Martinsville. We know that, as you said, Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex typically race very well at Martinsville. So does Tyler Reddick. Chris Buescher's in a must-win situation. He's the most vulnerable. He can't just have a good day. He's got to have a win in order to get in. And then it could not count William Byron or Ryan Blaney if that were to happen, if they happen to have bad days. But you're right about William Byron. Hendrick Motorsports is very, very, very good at Martinsville, and that's gone on for many, many years. So we'll see if William Byron can make it happen. He is in the best position of the six drivers, but he is still only 30 points to the good. He's only 30 points above with a total of 43 points available, or is it 43 points or at least 40 points available? There's still a chance that he could get knocked out if say Buescher wins or Blaney has a bad day. Or if he has
it's a total of 60, Sharon, 10 for each of the stages and then 40 at the end of the race. So it's actually a total of 60 available.
You're right. You're right. I forgot about the stage point. So yeah. So it's still not a safe place for William Byron, but you're right about Hendrick Motorsports always bringing a good car for their drivers, and especially a driver that's in the playoffs. I think it's wide open. I think Chris Buescher is certainly capable of getting the win. Whether or not he will is yet to be seen. But I think Tyler Reddick, Denny Hamlin, and Martin Truex Jr. Are all good racers at Martinsville. And I don't think anybody's safe in that group. I think it's going to be I don't want to say free-for-all, because I think that everybody is going to be very competitive in that race. Let me put it that way. What is your thought?
It's going to be an interesting one for sure. I think I'm with you all. I believe that William Byron is relatively safe. He tends to run well at Martinsville. He did win the spring race there last year and has had some very, very good runs at Martinsville, as well as, you know, pretty much every other track this year. He's really had a heck of a season, that's for sure. So barring something catastrophic, I think William Byron is probably safe to pencil into the championship four. So that really only leaves one slot available. And that means either a win by one of those five drivers that are further down that list, or a heck of a points day for anybody below the cut line. I would say Ryan Blaney he's plus 10. He's okay. He's not great. I mean, plus 10 is not nothing, but at the same time, we've seen how quickly 10 points can come and go in a race. I would say
exactly.
You're really looking at a race between Ryan Blaney and Tyler Reddick at this point. Martin Truex, I'll talk about him first. I think it's done for him. It's over for the 19 team. And the reason I say that is just what Martin said on the radio yesterday. It sounds like that team is frustrated, not just Martin himself, but the entire team. Frustrated, demoralized, they're at each other's throats. They have not had a very good playoffs. It's actually somewhat reminiscent of Chase Elliott and the 9 team last year, where they had a phenomenal regular season, won the regular season championship, brought a huge cushion of points into the playoffs. But unlike Martin Truex, Chase Elliott did just enough to squeak his way by all the way into Phoenix and then ended up finishing fourth in the championship four race. I don't think the 19 team has it in them to overcome. I believe they're a 15-16-point deficit. And looking at the people that they need to beat to do it, can you really say that the 19 team is running better than the 12 right now, or they're running better than the 45 right now? It's really tough to say that they are. Looking at the performance on the track, as well as it seems like the motivation or whatever that intangible word you want to use there, I just don't see it there with the 19 team. I think Martin Truex is eliminated this coming weekend. Looking at Denny Hamlin in the 11 team, that's another team. They've run well in the playoffs, but Denny has gotten to the point now, and we've seen it year after year after year, where Denny he extends just a little bit too far and ends up, for lack of a better way to put it, this is the choke time for the 11 team, and they choked hard yesterday. Ryan Blaney had a good laugh at Denny's expense, because Denny tried to slide him a few times, ended up chickening out on him, and then broke right afterwards. And again, another team with the wind out of their sails. And another thing that I find to be interesting is Denny Hamlin, known for running his mouth, known for stating his piece, has been silent since yesterday. He didn't say a thing on Twitter. He didn't even do his Actions Detrimental podcast, which usually comes out on Mondays. Nothing from Denny and the 11 team. I really think that the wind is out of their sails as well, and Denny Hamlin and the 11 team are going to be eliminated. Chris Buescher, he was the feel-good story for the regular season. Several wins back-to-back really brought RFK back to prominence. I think the Cinderella story is going to come to an end for him as well. It's obviously not out of the realm of possibilities, but historically speaking, Buescher has not tended to run well at Martinsville. He runs very well at Bristol, but we haven't seen him really run well at Martinsville. Maybe things change. But without a win, mathematically, yes, it is theoretically possible that Chris Buescher and that number 17 team can advance. But without a win, it's going to be very, very unlikely. I think Chris Buescher is eliminated as well. So we're really back to a race between Ryan Blaney and Tyler Reddick. Flip a coin, it's going to all come down to track position and who has the better day and better execution on pit road for those two.
Okay. He makes a good case, Jay. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to actually use some statistics here, which have actually surprised me. Hold on a second. Boom, lay down. Ryan Blaney actually has the best average finish at 9.5. I went into Racing Reference to pull up the stat lines. Doesn't have the win. But second is Denny Hamlin. Average finish is 10.3, five victories. And Mike talked about Martin Truex. Average finish is down at 16.0, puts him a little further down the list, but does have three victories. William Byron's just above him with 11 races at the track, one win, and an average finish of 15.1. So right there, that's what I say. I think it is completely wide open. Unfortunately, Mike said, I think the story, the Cinderella storyline for Chris Buescher, probably over. It was a good one. If he makes it to the final four, or the championship four, it would be a great one. I just don't see it, especially happening at Martinsville. His average finish there, a 19.4. But when we look at his year, he had got wins at tracks. He had never won it before, had a really great season. So, again, it's not out of the realm of possibility. And who are we missing in there? Tyler Reddick. He was in the mix there somewhere.
Yeah, he's 10 below, 10 points below.
No, I was looking for his stat line here, where he fit in as far as average finish. There, it's below seven races, only one top 10, average finish of 20.1. So there again, not his best. Seeing them step up their game, so that kind of changes things. The one thing I will say that I disagree with Mike on, I got to find something to disagree with on him on every topic. Truex and that team, we've heard the conversation throughout the year. I mean, it's been documented how him and crew chief James Small talked to each other. There was some serious frustration yesterday, without a doubt. I don't remember what it was that Truex responded to, and the answer was, I don't care, you know. But we've seen that before, and we've seen him come back and win races. So I think that, and Truex is one that I think we've seen can really compartmentalize and put that behind them, especially if they bring a fast race-winning capable car to Martinsville. A lot of their situation this year has just been, as much as you say that you create your own luck, it's been bad luck. I mean, that motor blowing up yesterday after having a dominant car. Think back to, and I'm trying to remember which race it was, three laps in, right front tire, something on it breaks, and he just crushes the wall three laps into a race. I mean, that, again, that is just some serious bad luck and having a rough year. Denny Hamlin, on the other hand, self-creates his, and we saw a little bit of that yesterday, and I think that that may be one where, as we like to say, shot himself in the foot. Because there's several drivers that I think are not going to give him any kind of break when it comes to Martinsville, Ryan Blaney being at the lead of that.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw his video, but he did not mince any words on his car radio, I guess, about Denny Hamlin. And he had some things to say after the race as well. So, in one sense, I'm glad people are speaking up about Denny Hamlin, because I feel like it's about time that they've done that. And you're right, he's been super, super quiet. We aren't hearing the usual Denny Hamlin chatter. And he does, if he wants to go after this championship, he's going to have to refocus himself and stop worrying about what everybody else is doing and focus on what he himself needs to do. The problem with Denny Hamlin is he's so worried about what the other guy's doing that he misses the boat for himself. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. And Martin Truex, I have to agree with both of you, because what both of you have said, I can see both points of view. I think that, and somebody said it, I think, on the broadcast, that Martin at one point said, that's just the way we communicate. And I don't know that it worked for them during the regular season. I don't know that it's working for them during the playoffs. I think that that team is extremely frustrated with one, and I don't even know if it's with one another, because it's like you said, Jay, they have had things happen that just and, you know, the flat tire, the engine expiring, all of those things that are happening. And they're in the same stable as Christopher Bell. You would think the veterans would be the ones that would be the cream rising to the top. But Christopher Bell has just, and he had a rough day yesterday himself. His race did not start out that well. And I guess I'm saying all of this to say things can happen. And that's the unknown that we have going into this race. Everything that Mike said is a possibility, and it could happen exactly the way he said. But there are unknowns with Martinsville, and I do think that it's going to be up for grabs, and we're going to see things happen that we don't expect to happen. William Byron could have an engine expire just like Martin Truex did, and he could be the guy that ends up below that cut line. So I don't think it's a given. I don't see him being a given. I do think that he could have bad luck just like everybody else, and something could happen that could take him out of the race. I do think that the closest race is between Ryan Blaney and Tyler Reddick, but Jay brings up a good point. This is not one of Tyler Reddick's best tracks. And I don't think that Tyler Reddick's had the best playoff run that he wanted to have either. I think his team has kind of faltered throughout these playoffs. And I think it all speaks to the fact that this playoff has been an extremely competitive playoff. And it is going to be interesting to see what happens at Miami. I'm sorry, Martinsville this next week, because I think it could shake up these points again, and I think a lot of things we're seeing now could be totally the opposite when it's all said and done. It may be exactly the same as it is right now, and that's just the point. We don't really know going into Martinsville how it's going to end up. So, Mike, you get the final say here.
Well, I mean, I kind of broke down everybody in my first reply, so I guess I can talk about the two guys that I really didn't talk about because they're already locked in. You got Kyle Larson and Christopher Bell. Can you tell who I had for the fantasy pool yesterday? Because only my juju is bad enough to take out Kyle Larson at Miami. But really, in all seriousness, you got to wonder what something like that, some just a demoralizing incident like that, what kind of an effect, if any, does that have on the five team? There were pictures that were posted yesterday of after the race, Cliff Daniels had kind of a huddle with the entire team right there by the hauler after they were done packing up the busted up race car. They didn't disclose what was said there, but you got to imagine Cliff Daniels, he has identified that as a potential demoralizing moment of running so very, very well, and then one just catastrophic mistake by the driver just wipes out their entire day. And I think Cliff Daniels is keenly aware that if that's not handled well, that could really kill the momentum that five team has going into Phoenix. Looking at Christopher Bell, that's a great shot in the arm. Complete opposite story, right? A terrible, terrible day long. NBC really highlighted about the radio on the 20 team mm-hmm. where Bell was talking about how tight the car was, how terrible it was. It was undrivable. He was cracking jokes about, oh, I guess I need to start working on driving right now, or something along those lines. And then all of a sudden, in the last 10 laps of the race, this guy comes out of nowhere and wins the thing. That has got to be a huge shot of momentum for the number 20 team going into, yes, they've got Martinsville this weekend, but looking forward into Phoenix, that 20 team has really got to be on a roll. Same thing for William Byron. Even if he does, he will most likely make the championship four, barring a catastrophic day this weekend at Martinsville. And that team mm-hmm. has just been consistently good. They didn't win the regular season championship. They just missed it to Martin Truex because of some consistency issues. But I think a lot of that consistency has been cleaned up in the playoffs.
And William Byron, that number 24 team, has probably been one of the most consistently strong teams that we've had through the duration of the playoffs. And they showed it again yesterday, running it up front most of the afternoon, coming home with another top five finish, one of many for that number 24 team. Also, if fans are paying attention, the number 9 team from Hendrick Motorsports, currently being driven by Chase Elliott, in the owner's championship standings, is in dead last, in a must-win situation after terrible performances at both Las Vegas and Miami. If the number 9 car does not win this weekend at Martinsville, the number 9 will be eliminated from owner's championship contention. So there's your update on that as well.
Okay. Let's see. It is Jay's turn. What's our next hot topic?
This one I want to go to, actually had some follow-up there real quick, though, since I was using actual statistics.
Sure.
Mike has finished last in our Cup Series fantasy picks the last 2 weeks. That's a fact. I got the chart. It's a fact. I'm not picking on him. I'm not poking at him. That's a fact. moving on to our next hot topic, though. This one, it cracks me up when you get facts released and people want to add to the story. So we're going to go with Brad Sweet, Kyle Larson expanding as they have bought or acquired the All-Star Circuit of Champions from Tony Stewart, another sprint car series, which is putting them on the level of possibly competing with the World of Outlaws when it comes to the top sprint car series across the United States. And I'll go into the what-ifs afterwards.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts about that news?
I did see the story. I'm not super familiar with the what-ifs and whatnot, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what Jay brings up with this one. But with regard to Kyle Larson continuing to expand his empire in dirt racing, look, the joke forever has always been that Kyle Larson races in the Cup Series to fund his dirt track addiction, and I don't know that that's necessarily just a joke. I think that there's at least a kernel, if not an entire ear or corn of truth to that. So seeing him continue to expand, I think, is great. Not just, and this isn't about Kyle Larson. You've got to think about the opportunities that he's giving, or at least doors that he's opening for so many other racers coming up through the dirt world and potentially eventually into the NASCAR world. Having a guy like Kyle Larson, a big name, a big celebrity, involved in promoting and growing the sport is only a good thing. So seeing him continue to grow that is phenomenal. With regard to buying it from Tony Stewart, I don't know if there's really any hay to be made there. I'm sure there's people reading into what that means as far as is Tony getting out of the circle track game. Is he getting more and more involved in NHRA, which it looks like he is. I don't know if that has anything to do with him selling a racetrack. I don't know about that. I really don't want to speculate too much, but either way, I'm really glad to see Kyle Larson continue to grow because he's a really positive force when it comes to developmental racing.
Yeah, I've seen some of that too, Mike, and I think that people are being a little hard on Tony Stewart. They got to think about why he bought that series and the All-Star Circuit of Champions, and this is kind of the realization of his dream. He bought that to save that series, and it did save that series. And now it's okay for him to move on because the series has been saved. It's going to be bought by Brad Sweet and Kyle Larson. Brad Sweet's sister is married to Kyle Larson, so it's all in the family there. I think this is a win-win-win situation all the way around. I don't think any less of Tony Stewart for selling it. I think he did what he set out to do, and now these guys are going to carry it on. And these are two of the best guys you'd want to have carry that on. So I like the idea that these guys bought it. And they are expanding it, and you're right. They're going to be real competitive now with the World of Outlaws, and I think it's going to be fun to watch that competition in both of those series. I think it's going to be exciting. So obviously there are a number of drivers out there that can be competitive across both of those series. So I don't see any negatives here. I think it's all good. Jay, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, I'm going to have a tough time finding something in this one to argue with Mike about, and it didn't take him long to go down that road of what if. Start with the fact of that it got sold. And Sharon, you made a great point. He revived it, he saved it, he revived it, and is now passing on that torch. And Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet are ones that want to pick it up and carry it. And we've seen this with the Cars Tour of Jeff Burton, Kevin Harvick, Justin Marks, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. buying the ASA Cars Tour Series. You know, they want to see it continue and bring it back to life to another level. So having somebody that's willing to do it. Tony Stewart has a lot of irons in the fire, and this is one he is willing to – and he didn't just sell it outright just to sell it and be rid of it. It went to somebody I think he fully knows is going to take it to another level, even above what he had. And I think about the fact that he's picked up with the SRX, just moving on to another chapter. And that's where the things started coming in. I saw a lot of the comments. Again, of people are, oh, he's going to now sell out of Stuart Haas Racing. Again, they've had a struggle. There's been talk about how much he shows up at the track, whether he's really supporting his NASCAR team. It's all about the NHRA. Okay, I haven't heard anything about him selling Eldora either, but there's only so much a person can do. He has chosen to put some focus on NHRA as well as the SRX series, both of which have been very successful. So I don't understand why you got to, I'll use the word hate on, but hold that against him when it comes to that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going down the road. But I think it's great for the sprint car series and world. And, again, when we talk about anything, if there is only one option, it can be, doesn't always have to be, but get a little stale and have some issues. The other thing, when I look at it, you think back the first year after Tony Stewart had bought it. Tony Stewart still, I don't know how much he does now, but at the time liked to run in these races, had some issues where he wouldn't run in his own series when it came to the All-Star Circuit of Champions. So he was actually running with the, and I'm going to mess it up, Pete Walton's group of, I can't think of it right now, but they run locally because that's what the first race I got to announce at Magnolia Motor Speedway, he was here racing with them instead of with his own series. ASCS. There we go, the ASCS Sprint Cars, and they have several regional series here across the Southeast. So there, too, it frees him up if he wants to run and not have any kind of controversy because he doesn't own the series anymore. So I see a lot of positives to it. Is there a possibility of where he's at with the NASCAR? Yeah, but nothing's been announced about that. We have heard or seen nothing from him. It still has his name on the side of the building. So until that changes, the what-if game, as Dave Moody likes to say, that's an endless game, and I don't want to play it.
Yeah, I'm not sure where all the hate's coming from either, but again, I don't have a whole lot more to say. I think it's a win-win-win situation all the way around the board here. And you're right. Tony knows he's passing this torch to a couple of people that are going to take good care of it. He knows this is a passion for Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet, and they're going to take it to another level. And I totally agree with that, and I think it's all good. So I don't have a whole lot to say. And, Mike, I totally skipped over you. What did you want to say?
Well, it is your show, so I guess you set the order however you want, you see fit. So if you want to skip over me, I guess that's your prerogative. But anyway, with regard to Tony Stewart and Stuart Haas Racing, I think that's where a lot of that, the term Jay used being hate, is coming from. I think it's a lot of really frustrated Stuart Haas Racing fans. They have seen the team decline over the past few years, and unfortunately Andy's not here being our resident Stuart Haas Racing fan, because I would like to get his take on it. But they've seen the performance on track of Stuart Haas Racing decline over this past few years, and they've been looking for something, anything to point their finger at, and a lot of people, and I'm not going to say myself not included on there, have pointed the finger at Tony Stewart and his many irons in the fire. as part of the reason why Stewart Haas Racing has experienced the decline that they have over the previous years. Whether that's valid or not, I don't know. But I think that explains why there's that immediate knee-jerk jump to hate of Tony Stewart and why he's getting out of it and all that. I think it's because of the frustration that Stewart Haas Racing fans have seeing their favorite Cup team really struggling over the past few years. So it's understandable. I'm not saying necessarily that they're right or wrong, but I can definitely understand where they might be coming from if that is indeed the case. With regard to the actual series itself, I hope Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet do a great job with it, and I have every bit of faith that they will. Like you said, Sharon, there are no two guys who are more qualified and more excited about continuing to grow dirt racing in the U.S. than Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet. So if you're looking for a perfect pair of stewards for a series like that, I don't know that you could do any better than those two. So I wish them the very best of luck.
Okay. And I agree with you with regard to the SHR fans. I understand the frustration. I get it. And somebody's got to be the scapegoat for it. But a lot of these teams do go through a cycle, if you will. And I think that's what's happening at Stewart Haas Racing. I call it waves, where you have your highs and your lows, and they just happen to be in a low and maybe on the rise. I don't know. But I certainly do. I agree with you, Mike. I understand what the frustration is. I don't know that I agree with the hate towards Tony Stewart over it, because it takes more than one person to run an organization, and he's not the be-all, end-all there. And I do think that there could be some other issues that are happening there. And maybe it would help if Tony was there more day-to-day operation-wise. But I'm sure he's put somebody in that position for the day-to-day operation of that organization. And if they can't do the job, then Tony Stewart is the owner. Or Gene Haas at the owner, they have to look at it and make a decision that maybe they need to make some personnel changes. But just because he owns it doesn't mean that he has to be there day-to-day. I know that Roger Penske isn't there day-to-day. I know that Rick Hendrick isn't there all day-to-day anymore. They put people into place to take care of the day-to-day operations of their day-to-day operation of their organizations. So the same thing is true at Stewart Haas Racing. So we'll have to see how it plays out. But eventually they will turn that corner and they will be able to be back on the upswing. And part of it is bringing in the new blood that they're bringing into the organization with drivers like Josh Berry. And he's going to be new in the Cup Series next year. So I don't expect him to be out winning a bunch of races next year. There is going to be a transition period here. So we'll see how it all plays out. But overall, I think it's a good move all the way around the board. Jay, you get the final word.
Yeah, the thing is, and I think back to even his in his racing career, Cup Series and otherwise, Tony Stewart has always been that polarizing figure. Kind of go back to Dale Earnhardt, either love him or you hate him, you know, using that mm-hmm. phrase. And this is one of those that I think it's a matter of who it is. You mentioned Roger Penske, not one that's at the track, has a lot of different irons in the fire with the track and Indy Racing League's teams as well. I don't see a lot being pointed at Gene Haas on his side as he's looking to get into Formula One. And then I look at other teams that have gone through their down times and struggles. Roush Fenway. Roush was at the track. He was more involved than I think any one of the owners that you can't get more involved than Jack Roush. Richard Childress, again, RCR, went through a stage of struggling. He was at there with the team 100% all the way. So that's not always necessarily the answer. I think this is just the one, the fact that it's Tony Stewart, people want to poke at because they know they can get under his skin for one, you know. And we saw that from the media side as well as the NASCAR side as well, just from everything he does. Like I said, just that polarizing figure when we talk about that. But overall, going back to the actual sprint car series, you both said it real well, of the giving back and bringing it to another level. Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet, nobody better to sell to. We've seen what they want to do, what they've done already with the High Limit series, and to combine that and just continue to grow it, I am so excited for that.
Okay. Mike, you got a topic you want to talk about?
Sure. This one has been in the rumor mill for the past couple of weeks, but they made it officially official this past weekend. Chandler Smith has been bought out of College Racing and will be racing with the Joe Gibbs Racing Xfinity Series program next year. So Chandler Smith staying in Xfinity Series, but leaving College Racing to go over to Joe Gibbs.
Is he driving the 19 car? I didn't see the word on it.
I don't know that they specifically said which Joe Gibbs Racing car that they're going to have him in. Right now, the 19 is just a kind of a rotation of pay drivers. The 20, obviously, is John Hunter Nemechek, but he's leaving to go drive the number 42 in the Cup Series next year. So there's really no clarity as to what specifically Chandler Smith is going to be driving beyond the fact that he will be in a Joe Gibbs Racing Xfinity Series car.
Well, okay. Okay, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of facts when it comes to that other than the buyout is complete and he is moving to Joe Gibbs Racing, as Mike said. There's a couple of things I'd heard, and we had talked about this or what the status of Joe Gibbs Racing might be, because we had already heard Sammy Smith was leaving the team to go to Junior Motorsports to fill that number 8 being left by Josh Berry. The one I heard, and I won't even say from any kind of credible source, I just saw somebody else put it out there, Sheldon Creed is another one that has opted to leave his current team of RCR. Somebody linked that to Joe Gibbs Racing. That is purely speculation. I have not even heard that rumor of anything from what I would consider an official and credible source, but that possibility is out there as he's looking for a ride, as is Matt DiBenedetto. Never know. DiBenedetto, it would be a return to Joe Gibbs Racing. But they are filling those seats. So when we look at Joe Gibbs Racing, they obviously have the intent to stay within the Xfinity Series. As Mike said, then they have another team that they have a tendency to rotate, whether it be Cup drivers or other fill-ins based on sponsorship. You also still have Ryan Truex, who got a win for him this year. Trevor Bayne has made several starts for him. So those are some that may be in that rotation of drivers or may be able to fill a full-time seat if they can get the sponsorship worked out. What perplexes me here is right now in the Xfinity Series, we still have 8 that are in contention to go to the Championship 4. 3 of those 8 in the final, 3 of the final 8 that are still in contention are changing teams next year. Sammy Smith going from JGR to Junior Motorsports. Chandler Smith now announcing he's leaving college to go to JGR, which, again, would be moving into a championship organization. I'm not disputing that. And then Sheldon Creed announcing he's leaving RCR. And, again, he's not in a great position but is still one of the final 8. We'll find out this next weekend who goes to the championship 4. It just blows my mind that half of the final 8 in the championship battle are moving teams. I don't know what the issue there is. I mean, like I said, with Chandler Smith, as much as I like what College Racing has been doing and building, I think going into a Joe Gibbs Racing seat obviously is a step up. I don't think anybody can deny that, at least the opportunity to there is. But it's kind of confusing, especially being that they kind of let Toyota, as a manufacturer, we'll call it, let him go to begin with when he left Kyle Busch Motorsports from the Truck Series, that there seemed to be that split. And maybe it was the plan all along, was like, we just can't get you in one right now. Come back and we'll see what can happen. And they obviously want him because they did the buyout. So returning home to Toyota, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling I get, too, is that it was a place marker for Chandler Smith until he could get back to Joe Gibbs Racing. The part that I think is is the sad part of all of this is college racing, because they brought Chandler Smith into the fold, and we had this conversation a week or maybe two ago where we were talking about the financial struggles for college racing to the point that A.J. Allmendinger might not be able to race in Cup next season. I got to wonder if this move doesn't allow them to maybe drop the Xfinity Series car in order to have A.J. run in the Cup Series for next season. It's funny how all these have a connection in some way or another, and there's certain reasons for why things happen the way that they happen, and it seems a little odd to us at the time, but that's kind of what it feels like. It kind of feels like Chandler Smith came to college racing as a place marker, a place for him to be, to keep himself in top condition, if you will, for when the JGR ride opens up. And that happened with John Hunter Nemechek moving over to Legacy Motor Club next season. So now you've got a championship, potential championship winning car that is open for Chandler Smith to take. I am going to make a quick announcement real quick before we move on. For those of you that are tuning in for the first time, we let you know that we are going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, but we are going to perhaps continue. We've got a couple more topics here, I guess, and we will record that part of the conversation as part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. So you'll be able to hear the rest of that conversation when the podcast becomes available, and I'll go out on Twitter and Facebook to let you know when that happens. So at your convenience, you can fast forward to the two-hour mark on any of our players, whether it be on TuneIn, iTunes, iHeartRadio, wherever you tune in. You can fast forward to that two-hour mark, and you'll be able to hear the rest of the conversation. We're also on Amazon podcast now, too. So there's a lot of different ways you can listen to our show, as well as our website, BanforRacing.com. So with that, I'll just say, in a way, it does kind of make sense to me. They did the buyout. That buyout obviously helps college racing at this particular point in time, and it may be just what they needed for AJ to race in the Cup Series for next season. So we'll see if there's any other announcements that come out that substantiate that. But I think that's all part of the grand scheme of things, if you will. Mike, your thoughts?
I don't know that this is part of college racing's master plan here to lose Chandler Smith. If you look at the statement college put out
either,
when, because I mean, if you look at the statement that college put out when this was announced, it was very cold. It was basically the driver Chandler Smith, who has raced for us for a year and has done this, this, and this, will be leaving at the end of the season, and that was it. It was not a very warm and We're happy to see him go, and we wish him the very best. You know, the typical niceties that go into a driver departure kind of message really weren't there. And that kind of ties into what we talked about with the press conference at the end of the Indianapolis race after A.J. Allmendinger won there. It seemed like there were – not Indianapolis, Charlotte, when Chris Rice was very cold about Chandler Smith and seemed like he was throwing some shade at him, because I believe he knew that the Joe Gibbs Racing deal was – if it wasn't finalized at that moment, I'm sure he knew that it was almost surely a done deal. And he seemed like he was very frustrated with Chandler Smith at that point as well. So I don't think colleague losing Chandler Smith was part of their plan. In fact, I think they had hoped that Chandler Smith would become a development driver that they could eventually build their Cup Series organization on, and they could hang their hat and say, that guy there, that Chandler Smith guy winning in the Cup Series, we made that. We were the team that developed that. And I think they lost that opportunity, and I think they might be a little bit frustrated about that.
They do benefit, though, from the buyout.
Well, certainly they do. And like you said, they've got the financial position that they're in
as far as sponsorship or the lack thereof and the need to find some money. So you're right. They're kind of getting pulled in two different directions here. On one end, they've got the desire to have that development driver that they own, and he's their guy. But on the other end, mm-hmm. like you said, they're up against the wall with money. So maybe they just needed the money to have it happen. I don't know. You would think, though, if it was that beneficial to them, they would have been at least publicly been at least a little bit nicer about Chandler leaving, because it sure seemed like they were pretty salty about it, at least the way it happened. So I don't know. With regard to Chandler Smith moving over to Joe Gibbs Racing, I agree with Jay. I think it's going to be a step up from him. I believe that Joe Gibbs Racing equipment, by and large, is better than Colleague. Maybe a year or two ago, that wasn't the case before Colleague got serious about the Cup Series program. I think that really dragged down the performance of their Xfinity program. But I think right now, 2023 going into 2024, I believe that Joe Gibbs Racing equipment is probably the best, if not the very best, one of probably two teams that produce the best equipment week in and week out in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. So I believe it is a step up for Chandler Smith in there. Given that he's run fairly decent in calling equipment this year, I can't help but imagine he's going to be a championship contender next year, assuming that Joe Gibbs Racing keeps the pace that they've had over the previous, I mean, really decade or so in the Xfinity Series, and there's really no reason to believe they won't.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
Well, and this one's tough to say because, again, you're talking about two rookies. When they're losing Sammy Smith. JGR is losing Sammy Smith and bringing in Chandler Smith. They both had one victory throughout the season. Overall, I think Chandler Smith has probably done better overall, and I was trying to pull up the Racing Reference stat line, but I wasn't able to yet to look at it. I agree with Mike here that I think Colleague Racing said, hey, we took a chance on you to put you in the Xfinity Series, invested in you, which I believe was for a three-year deal. I think they bought out 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have that for sure. But as Mike said, that was when they started the Cup Series as well, and that was one that they looked at of eventually moving up to Cup. So it does kind of put them in a bind, because even with the money they're going to get for the buyout, they now got to go find another driver to invest in, whether it be a rookie again or not, or something else. That they got to start over, if you will, with bringing a driver in, no matter whether it be a veteran driver or a decent driver, one that's won in the Xfinity, say Noah Gregson, just throw his name out there because I haven't said it all show, but they got to invest in somebody, and it is a learning curve. With Matt DiBenedetto, again, I know he's out there looking for a ride, Sheldon Creed, whoever it be. So there's still some names out there that I'll be interested in that too. Some of this stuff so late in the season is another thing that has really kind of perplexed me this year. I know we always have a couple fill-ins here and there of what seats are left and available at the end of the year, but there's been some rather big moves here in the latter part of a season that I just don't recall before. And that too, I guess I kind of have concerns. I mean, just the fact that it is this late in the season. – As I said, you have three championship contending teams that are switching. Something weird's going on.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I just went over to the team chart for 2024 at Jayski's for the Xfinity Series, and it's unbelievable how many question marks that they have up over there. A lot of question marks. In fact, well, one of the question marks obviously has been answered for Joe Gibbs Racing, and that is that of the three cars, they had the 18, the 19, and the 20. All three of them have question marks, but we know now that Chandler Smith's going to fill in one of those question marks. And have they said where Sammy Smith is going?
Well, he's going. Sammy Smith is going to Junior Motorsport.
The number eight.
The number eight.
There you go. The number eight.
Oh, that's right. He's
to replace Josh Berry.
Number eight. Okay, I just couldn't remember where. Okay, so he's going to Chevy. Well, here's the thing. I do agree with you guys that they invested in Chandler Smith, and it is a hard pill to take when your driver comes to you and tells you that they're going to be moving over and going back to Toyota. At that point, college has to feel like they were kind of used, if you will, in that whole process. But why in the world would Chandler sign a three-year deal with them unless he knew that all along that Joe Gibbs Racing was going to buy out that deal? What I think is interesting here is that if you look at the college racing teams, right now they've got a bunch of question marks there as well. They don't have drivers for the number 10 or the number 11 for next season. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of this plays out. I guess what I'm saying is that even though it was a hard pill to swallow for college racing to have their driver tell them that they were leaving, and I'm sure it was a hard pill to swallow, it's happening. The buyout is happening at a kind of a convenient time for them as well, because they need that extra money. Because right now they don't have drivers in that number 10 or number 11. Now, I think that they probably know who's going to drive those cars, but I just wonder if that buyout money isn't going to help A.J. Allmendinger race in the Cup Series. Maybe not. Maybe it's not going to help. Maybe it's going to keep them, allow them to have two cars in the Xfinity Series and allow them to be more competitive in the Xfinity Series. Maybe A.J.'s going to take one of those cars and who knows who is going to take the other one. But I just think that the buyout's not going to hurt college racing. I think it's going to help them at a time that they need that extra help. And I agree with you that it's a tough pill to swallow when you think you've got a driver you can develop and move on with, only to find out that that's not the case. So I get it. Mike, what's your wrap-up?
Well, we're talking about the buyout potentially funding keeping A.J. Allmendinger in the Cup Series. I don't know how much – obviously, I'm not privy to what the contract actually was worth, but I don't know how much a contract for a rookie Xfinity Series driver, what kind of cash value that really has in terms of a buyout. I'd be shocked, absolutely just blown away, if it, you know, 2 years worth of a rookie Xfinity Series driver even came close to half a season worth of Cup Series racing. You just look at the raw costs. An Xfinity Series team costs somewhere between $4 and $6 million per year, and a Cup Series team runs $15 to $20 million. So roughly three times the cost to run a Cup Series team versus an Xfinity Series team. So just using that math right there, 2 years worth of rookie Xfinity Series driver.
Well, I didn't say cover it. I said help it.
Well, fair enough. Who knows what that gap was there, too. They really have been tight-lipped about how far off they were to make A.J. whole just to stay in the Cup Series. So you're right. Maybe it does bridge the gap enough there. But I would be hesitant to say that this is some sort of a financial windfall for college racing here, either getting bought out. Who knows what they had invested in Chandler Smith financially. But like I said, I don't expect it to be Cup Series level money for a driver like Chandler Smith. No offense to him. He just doesn't have the deep enough resume to command that kind of financial investment, not at least not yet. As far as his performance over at Joe Gibbs Racing, yet to be determined. I believe he will most likely be a championship contender, like I said in my previous reply. But it is interesting to see how there's so many pieces in play right now in the Xfinity Series, where the Cup Series is more or less settled. There's a couple question marks here and there. The Colleague 16 is probably the biggest one at this point. But by and large, the Cup Series is pretty well settled, not so much in the Xfinity Series. And we're probably going to be off the air for the off season before those pieces start falling into place. So we'll have a lot to talk about come the end of January when we get back going at this.
Without a doubt. Okay. Jay, you got a topic?
Oh, let's see what we got left on our list. Actually, this one we didn't talk about. I guess how far we go with this one. But the number 38 truck of Zane Smith, was DQ'd this past weekend. And I believe from what I understand is it did not affect the championship four, as even with his second place finish, points-wise, it was still going to be the same, as he was pretty much in a must-win situation. But was DQ'd, and from what Mike put up here, I thought that window was a little bit longer, but Bob Pockrass tweeted, the deadline has passed for Front Row Motorsports to appeal the DQ on the Zane Smith truck, and they did not do so.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts?
I didn't watch the truck series race. I watched highlights, including some video snippets of the 38 truck on the track. And if you've ever seen a disqualification come, and you saw it this weekend, because that it wasn't even close. Well, Harvick was disqualified at Talladega because there were a few fasteners that were missing or loose on his windshield. The 38 truck, the entire front windshield, if you look right where the name tag is on the driver's side of that windshield,
you
it's deformed and caved in. It's very obvious that either the support structure that's supposed to hold that up wasn't properly installed, or it has broken, or they played way too many games with it and it was way too obvious. It was one of those ones where you might as well not spend the money on fuel and tires because you're going to get disqualified. You might as well park the thing because there was no chance that truck was passing tech, and that's probably why they didn't even bother to appeal the DQ. Second place finish was not enough to advance Zane Smith. He was actually eliminated in the last round anyway, I believe. So he was out of the game, but it didn't move the points enough to affect the championship four from there. Which is good. You would hate to see something as significant as the four drivers who are in a race for a championship that have that affected by a completely unrelated team playing games or having some sort of a mechanical failure. I doubt it was a mechanical failure. They wouldn't disqualify somebody for just a mechanical failure. So a team playing games, getting caught, getting disqualified, that would be a really bad look to have that affect the championship four. So I'm really glad that it didn't. I am looking forward to probably not this weekend at Martinsville since there's no truck series race, but hopefully at Phoenix we get a little bit more information about exactly what was wrong with that 38 truck that led to that disqualification, because as we've seen, NASCAR has been very straightforward and transparent with bringing these illegal parts to the racetrack and showing us fans as well as the other teams of, hey, if you do this, you're going to get disqualified, so don't do that. I'm looking forward to seeing exactly what that 38 truck had going on that made it so obviously wrong.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too, Mike. I like the transparency that NASCAR has given us this year. But you're right, it did not affect anything. Zane Smith actually had to have a win if he was going to be able to stay into the playoff contention. He came in second. And it wasn't enough. So he was still below the cut line, but now he's way below the cut line with the DQ. It will be interesting to see what NASCAR comes back with after they do their further investigation at the R&D Center and tell us what happened. I do think it's also interesting that Front Row Motorsports has chosen not to appeal the disqualification of Zane Smith. I think they know, especially with this photo that was released, that they don't have a leg to stand on, so why go through that process? And NASCAR has been real clear about this. I do find it surprising that they would do this, knowing that Kevin Harvick was called on it, if they're doing it on purpose. And I understand it does give them a little bit of a competitive advantage to have that loose. So I think I heard on, I must have been Sirius XM radio, somebody talking about how they used to do that all the time back in the day. But now NASCAR's catching it and they're not allowing it because it is a competitive advantage to the driver. So you're right. I'm glad that it didn't affect the championship title run because you know how I feel about that. I don't like seeing us crown a champion when the team, and I'm not going to say the driver, but the team has been caught doing things that are illegal. I think it's worked out exactly the way that it has worked out. Front Row's not going to appeal it. So that tells me they knew what was going on there, and they know they had a responsibility there. So not a whole lot more to say on that one, except I'm curious to see what NASCAR comes out with pending their further investigation. Jay?
Well, and here's the thing. It was initially Front Row's statement was they were disappointed with the penalty and they were going to stay in close contact with NASCAR as far as what they found. So whether that brace was designed to give a little bit or it gave more than what they thought it might if it were intentional, don't know. And Larry McReynolds always likes to say it. NASCAR has to enforce the rule as it is, not based on intent or whatever. It was clearly not race damage because it's on the front windshield, and so it did not come from just race damage or wear and tear. You go back to a couple weeks ago at Talladega, Kevin Harvick, they were aware of that issue with the bolt in the windshield. And I know when we talked about this, we said we didn't think that would be an aero advantage. It apparently was. But they were aware of it and would put a sealant on that screw to hold it in place. For whatever reason, that sealant didn't work either. So they knew that was a spot where that could happen, and they had taken steps to try and alleviate that by adding the additional sealant so that that bolt or nut couldn't work its way out, but it still did. So this is one where NASCAR was in a position. It clearly, and it's kind of curious because this is one that, once the race is over and you're not under race speed, that brace would pop back up and you wouldn't see it. Going through tech, it measures, hits the points on the inspection, that it's only when the amount of force that's created by racing at 160 or whatever speed that it creates that. And we go back several years when it was the rear windshields that the SHR team and HMS, Chase Elliott was one of them, I think, got involved in that, of buckling and then popping back up once you're not up to speed. So that appears to be the same thing. And this one, I see where they were at. Cause again, you mentioned they were in an absolute must win situation. The mathematical, I think, was all but impossible for them if they really did try and throw everything they could at it. What I feel bad for, I'm with you guys. I'm glad he didn't win and it be a part of the storyline of who should have been in the championship for and whatever. But I feel bad for Zane Smith. We know he's moving up to the Cup Series, and I know Mike said it. He's had a hot, cold year. But his 3 years in the Truck Series, he finished second, second, and first in the 3 years that he was in the Truck Series. To end his Truck Series career and moving up to the Cup Series like this, I just feel bad for him as far as that.
Yeah. Okay, Mike?
Well, Sharon, you said Front Row didn't appeal the disqualification because they knew they didn't have a leg to stand on, and neither did their windshield. All right. I'll be here all week. Yeah, as far as the what they did to it, who knows? We'll find out in a couple of weeks. Like I said, I don't believe it was a mechanical failure because NASCAR tends to be pretty understanding when things fail and you made your very best effort. Same thing with the Kevin Harvick windshield. I know they said they put a sealant on it to try and keep those screws from backing out, and I believe that NASCAR looked at it and they determined that that either was not applied correctly or some other thing within the team's control led to the screws backing out and being in the situation that the four car was. And I believe the same thing is the case with the number 38 truck. They did something or failed to do something that led to that windshield support failing and caving in the windshield and giving a potential aerodynamic advantage to the number 38 truck. And they were rightfully disqualified. And I believe Front Row is correct in not appealing that penalty. With regard to what it means for Zane Smith, it's realistically nothing. I mean, like Jay said, he's got one more race left in the Truck Series and he's not racing for the championship. Maybe he bothers to come off the couch. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. I'm sure he will because he's a professional and he's under contract and everything, but realistically it doesn't really make a huge difference for him. It's a shame to see him go out like that, but after the year he's had, which has not been good, he had a pretty decent start to the year, but realistically ever since probably before North Wilkesboro, a couple weeks before North Wilkesboro, that 38 truck has not been good.
They've had a couple flashes here and there, but generally that 38 truck has not been out, up to the speed that I believe we've been accustomed to with them over the past few years. I don't know what happened, but either way, the results speak for themselves. And they had a little bit of success early in the season and then just kind of coasted on that. And that coasting came to an end quite some time ago, and their season is finally over at this point. So I'm sure Zane is probably about ready to be done with it, and so is the rest of everybody else.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. I think Zane is ready to move on and put this last year of his Truck Series racing in the rearview mirror. And it is unfortunate that this happened to him. And but it is what it is. That's all I can say. It is what it is. It happened. Now they got to move forward. They've got, what, two more races to end up the season, and then they're going to have a different driver in that truck, and Zane is going to be moving on to the Cup Series. So we'll see how it all plays out. There's really not a whole lot more to add here. I'm just surprised that they tried it, knowing that the other team was caught. And obviously, they've got pictures of it, so they noticed it during the race. And I think NASCAR is probably being extra vigilant about looking for that right now, as they should be. And I'm glad it all worked out the way it was supposed to work out. When somebody's doing something illegal, it should be caught, and it should be penalized. And all of that happened. So not a lot for me to add there. Jay?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Like I said, the way that this final part is, my final half of the season here, some of it was mistakes by the team. Some of it was just bad luck. I think back, correct me if I'm wrong, was it not Zane Smith who spun out on pit road or locked it up and body checked his own crewman? Was that not his team? Feels like it's kind of a Truex thing of just the string of luck they've had, and that put them in a severe desperation mode. Again, I'm not saying that they did this intentionally, but it would add into the story of they got one shot. That's all they got left is to throw everything they could at it. So hopefully this doesn't tarnish Zane Smith's record. As said, he's moving to the Cup Series, looking to build with Spire Motorsports / Trackhouse and that combination of agreement. I hope the best for him, as well as Front Row Motorsports. And I think this is a case where not appealing says a lot. Whether it was intentional or not, they know they aren't going to be able to fight it. Even if it was a parts failure, as they said with Kevin Harvick's, that then your responsibility is to buy better quality parts, I guess.
Okay. Okay. One round topic here. Maybe Carson Hocevar starting his own late model program. Anybody want to comment on that?
Hey, good for him. That's about all I got.
Jay?
Wow. No, it goes back to what we've seen from, we talked about Kyle Larson, Brad Sweet, Stuart Haas, Tony Stewart. Especially at this young of an age for Carson Hocevar, to have that love and passion and already look into the future, not just for himself. And I know when you talk about racing, investing in a race team or anything to do with racing, it is not an exactly a great financial investment. It is more an investment in the future of the sport and future drivers. So I like it. Hopefully it's one of those of we've seen some that are real successful with it. I think Kyle Busch with KBM Motorsports, that it is successful for him. Or again, even if it is just kind of a side hobby, it will create opportunity. So I like it, and I'm hopefully he's successful with it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same boat. I think it's good for Carson Hocevar that he's able to do that. And I do think that racing is a passion for him, and this is a chance for him to carry out that passion, if you will. So I think that's all a good thing for him. But you're right. Time tells the rest of the story as to how far he'll be able to go with it. It does worry me that he's doing it at such a young age. because that may or may not help him as he builds the program and everything else. But who knows? Maybe it will work out for him, and he'll make a great success out of it, and he'll be able to do what Kyle Larson did. Or not Kyle, well, Kyle Larson too, but I was thinking Kyle Busch, in mentoring so many new drivers coming into the sport. So we need that kind of a team in NASCAR, and having a driver lead that up is always a good thing, because drivers want to drive for a successful driver, and Carson has certainly had a very successful year. So we'll see how it continues to play out. But that's, I don't think we need to go around a second time on that one. And I think there was just one other topic here, and that's Dean Thompson returning to Tricon Garage in the Truck Series. Any thoughts on that one, Mike?
Good for him. Now,
you're so opinionated.
As far as Dean Thompson going back to Tricon, I mean, somebody's got to cause the wreck in the middle of the field, so why not Dean? Where else is he going to go? And the good thing with Dean consistently staying in the same truck is he won't be confused about what truck to blame for the wreck that he caused in his post-wreck interviews. So we've got that going for him as well. That's pretty much all I've got on that one.
Okay, Jay.
Way to egg him on, Sharon. You should have just left it at good for him. No, this is one. If I'm not saying he hasn't been involved in wrecks, whether or not they were of his own fault, but he was a rookie in the Truck Series. We've seen what he did in the ARCA Series as well in the starts he got with Venturini. I think he is a very solid up-and-coming driver, and I'm happy for him. To be back, as Mike did say, of at least in the same truck and team to build on what they've been building on so far. I think he is one that will develop and we'll see more of. He has come so close to getting wins, both in the Truck Series, having good trucks, and as well as in the few ARCA starts. So I look forward to his future.
Okay, I'm just going to say ditto to all of that. I think that Dean Thompson is, it's nice that he's getting this second chance, and not second chance, I don't want to put it that way, a second year with Tricon Garage is a good thing. And we'll see how he develops in his second year with the organization. Let's go ahead. It's time for us to do our roundtable to sign off. And so let's go ahead and get your thoughts about signing off. Mike?
Good for me. No, it's Mike_O on Twitter, Mike_O on Reddit. I'm on call for work on Thursday. I may or may not be available, so I'll have to keep you posted on that. I also don't have my November schedule. I really hope I'm going to be around to talk about the race that we got coming up in Phoenix in 2 weeks there. Not the Phoenix is the most thrilling race, but it is the NASCAR Cup Series Championship, as well as the championship for the other two races. So I really do hope I can at least talk to you all for some of that. I'll let you know. Look forward to talking to you next time.
Okay, sounds good. Jay?
Well, doing the prison ministry I did this morning, I had a couple other words and phrases for the week. I'm adding to that of, good for him, to my list of things that I'm going to carry throughout the week. So you can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8, on Twitter and Instagram. And I do look forward to this week, the preview of, we got one more race for the Cup and Xfinity Series before we even set the championship four for all three series. So that'll be great on Thursday. Mike, hopefully you can join us. I know Brian was looking forward to it as well. Hopefully he doesn't have any meetings get scheduled there. And then like Mike said, of the championship races, always provide some stories. So we'll look forward to that in the final closing weeks here, unfortunately, for the NASCAR season.
Yes, I always look forward to having as many people as possible on our last couple of shows here. We'll be reviewing Martinsville next week and then Phoenix the following week, and that's going to be it. And then, Jay, we preview Martinsville and then preview Phoenix, and that's going to be it. So we've only got a couple weeks left here with Bamfa Racing Radio for the season, and definitely looking forward to both of those races. A big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate all of you for taking time to hear what we have to say. And we hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoy doing it. A shout out to our Bamfa Racing crew, Sal Segala, Mike Orzel, and Jay Huseman. You guys are all great. And I'm always look forward to our Hot Topic Sound Off conversations. You guys are entertaining as well as good with your opinions. So thank you for that. And we didn't get a fantasy update. Maybe we can do that on Thursday, Jay. But definitely looking forward to doing
it. I don't know. They're going to have enough time. I don't think it's going to be able to happen.
Yeah, I won't tell you who my pick was for Cup Series this week. But
Go ahead, Jared.
I was going to say, at first I thought, that was a bad pick. And then all of a sudden it turned out to be good. But go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that was joking as I picked him. I was like, normally you like to pick Martin Truex, and I said I was going to steal him from you, and you said, I ended up with Christopher Bell. And when it was all said and done, I was like, yeah, that's what I get for stealing your pick.
Yeah, I said Christopher Bell's going to ring the bell at Homestead.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You did call that shot. Yep.
So... But anyway, yeah, at first he started out pretty slow, though, but then did come around. So anyway, I was happy to see him get that victory, and we'll look for the fantasy update at the next show on Thursday. We'll do our podcast as we usually do and put it out in the early part of the afternoon, so you can watch for that. And with that, guys, I think we're ready to call it a night here on Bamfa Racing Radio.
Good night, everybody.
Have a good night.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you on Thursday.